Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today, we'll discuss the article by Greenland et al. Titled, Morning Sympathetic Activity After Evening Binge Alcohol Consumption. This article was published January 15, 2021. Joining me today are editor Nisha Charkoudian, lead author Jason Carter, and expert Craig Steinbeck. Let's get started.
Thanks, Kara. Binge drinking is a major public health problem in the United States and other countries. In addition to the risks associated with alcohol poisoning and addiction to alcohol, there are major cardiovascular consequences to binge drinking as well, including increased risk of hypertension and other cardiovascular diseases. However, the mechanisms underlying these increased risks are incompletely understood. In the present study, Greenland and colleagues evaluated sympathetic neural mechanisms and sleep quality after a night of laboratory-controlled binge drinking. Jason, the title of your paper might surprise some people, the fact that you reproduced binge drinking in a laboratory environment. Could you tell us a bit about why you chose to study this topic and why you use this particular approach?
Well, thanks. It is an interesting study design. What got our lab interested in this was we had done a research study several years back, published in one of AJP Heart's sister journals, Endo. And we were looking at the impact of acute alcohol consumption on sympathetic activity during an orthostatic stressor. And I remember thinking as we did that study design that, boy, why are we dosing these individuals in the early morning after an overnight fast? That's our typical, you know, method with microneurography, but is it really what happens in real life? And as we dove back into the literature, and we were able to see that there had been, you know, probably about five or six articles beginning in the early 90s that had looked at alcohol consumption and its sympathoexcitatory impact on the nervous system, we realized that all of these study designs had been done in the early morning hours or afternoon. And yet that's not when binge drinking typically occurs. Binge drinking typically occurs in the evening. And by having that in the evening, it impacts not only sympathetic activity at that night, but presumably throughout the night. And importantly, that next morning when we're at high risk for myocardial infarctions and sudden cardiac death and other things associated with that morning autonomic surge. And so we started to think through this, collect a little bit of preliminary data and think of this in terms of a pragmatic design, right? I think a lot of times we design experiments that are easy, convenient to do, that control for as many factors. And that's the beauty of doing it after an overnight fast, but it's not realistic with the real environment. So we decided to do, for the first time, a study that would look at binge drinking in the evening consumption hours, coupled with our polysomnography laboratory that studies overnight sleep using gold standard PSG, and then having an autonomic stress test in the morning.
Thanks, Jason. I was very interested to see the approach that you took in this particular study. And as you've just mentioned, that an important aspect of your study was related to the relationships among drinking or binge drinking, sleep physiology, and sympathetic activity. And I know that your laboratory does a lot of work with these relationships. So could you tell us a little bit more about why sleep is an important aspect here, or what that interaction is that you're interested in between sleep and sympathetic activity?
Yeah, thanks, Nisha. I mean, one of the things that people think about alcohol is that it can actually help them sleep. And while it's indisputable that in some individuals, it may help initiate sleep a little bit faster, it certainly disrupts the sleep patterns throughout the night. Study after study has shown that alcohol consumption in the evenings will disrupt, for example, rapid eye movement sleep. It disrupts other aspects of sleep. It really dampens down your ability to get into the really meaningful stages of deep sleep and more importantly, REM sleep. And so it really is an important topic that has been studied in isolation in the sleep field. But then you start to couple that with the autonomic nervous system and the impact of it on cardiovascular disease and risk and morbidity and mortality. And there's really not a lot of information out there. We know it can be sympathoexcitatory, but we have no idea how long that sympathoexcitation lasts. I mean, studies have only been done in a limited time frame and certainly not studied in the long term. So this interaction between what's happening at night as we sleep is really important. There's very limited data out there on what's happening. And yet that's one third of our lives. I mean, if we're sleeping the amount that's been recommended, of around 7 to 8 hours. You think of that, we're supposed to be sleeping one third of our lives. We know that it's really important, for example, that we have a blood pressure dip, well characterized, that we should have at least a 10% dip from our daytime values. Yet we know very little about this interaction between sleep and the autonomic nervous system, in particular the sympathetic surge, and what can happen when we have things like alcohol or other things that are disruptive to both the sleep and the autonomic nervous system. You couple that with the lack of knowledge we have the morning after, and we felt that this was a really important aspect to do.
Thank you so much, Jason. Those things are all so important. And as I think I've mentioned to you in the past, I personally feel so strongly about how important sleep is and how little that's recognized in our culture. So I really appreciate all the work you're doing in this area. Craig, I'd like to turn to you now. And we know that you've done a lot of work in the area of sympathetic control of blood pressure as it relates to cardiovascular health. Could you tell us some of your impressions of this study as it relates to kind of a bigger picture of cardiovascular health in the present day?
Thanks, Nisha. And I guess first and foremost, I have to say I really liked the design and control here. Studies using microneurography are challenging at the best of times. So the control put into place and the evaluation of repeated measures in this context is really fantastic. But from a bigger picture, I appreciate the applicability. In North America, at least, alcohol is embedded in our culture from weddings to camping trips. So the study here has identified these cardiovascular deficits following this normalized behavior, particularly the following 8 hours of washout, you still see this cardiovascular stress, increased heart rate, increased sympathetic reactivity, and decreased control of blood pressure. And so I really appreciate the applied aspect of this particular study with this normalized behavior in our culture.
Thanks, Craig. I think those are really important points. Here in January 2021, I feel like we would be remiss if we didn't mention anything about the COVID pandemic that we're in the middle of. Certainly, this worldwide public health crisis has had implications for both mental and physical health, and may have had, or probably has had, an impact on alcohol consumption as well. I'd actually like both of you to comment on any particular aspect of increased risk in today's situation that comes to your mind with regard to the COVID pandemic and its related risks and stressors. Jason, we'll start with you.
Yeah, thanks, Nisha. That really is a very critical and timely question, and was anticipating we might talk about that given the time frame of this when this came out. We certainly did not do this work thinking we were going to be heading into a pandemic, but the work may now be even more relevant from the perspective of that. We've seen numerous reports coming out in recent months that binge drinking has gone up throughout the pandemic, as you can imagine. I mean, people are not necessarily going out to bars because of the closures, but there was a recent article published in the American Journal of Drug and Alcohol Abuse where they reported a 60% increase in individuals that do binge drink, that they're drinking more than they even used to drink. And, you know, that's a problem when you think in the context that nearly 25% of adults age 18 and up are engaged in binge drinking episodes, which is a 4 to 5 drink equivalency over just a 2-hour time frame. And we know that is the worst scenario, along with heavy chronic alcohol consumption. So if anything, this issue of alcohol consumption is getting worse. The pandemic, there's pretty clear evidence from multiple studies now that alcohol consumption in some ways has gone up throughout the world.
Thanks, Jason. Yeah, those are really important points. Craig, I don't know if you had anything that was different or similar about the Canadian perspective on this issue.
We certainly have a similar perspective. And I think that, as Jason pointed out, it's a North American phenomenon. It's a worldwide phenomenon right now. And there's a lot of anxiety. There's lots of published literature on the stress that goes along with the pandemic. And so that may be feeding into this use or dependency on alcohol as a coping mechanism, perhaps. We also have a combined influence of, you know, reduced physical activity. And so when you start extrapolating perhaps to populations that have other cardiovascular risk factors, older age or inactivity, and then you overlay this cardiovascular stressor that we're using more as a crutch, I think it's a really important consideration in terms of what this may be doing to our overall health.
So I'll just ask a general question now to both of you, again, starting with Jason. Are there any other aspects of the study that you'd like to highlight that we haven't discussed yet today?
We know that women and men both consume and metabolize alcohol differently. And so while we didn't have the sample size to interrogate that issue, we're continuing these studies. And that is something I'm very keen on reporting out, because there is some evidence to suggest that metabolism may be different. And we may not necessarily see these same patterns in men versus women.
Exactly. Very, very important. Jason, actually, that was a question that I've been thinking about when I was reading your paper. And I know you've done so much work in this area. So I was actually wondering if that was something that you guys would be following up on. And I'm really excited to hear that you will be. And it's true. I mean, you know, as we've talked about, you know, amongst ourselves in our community, a lot of the research that we rely on for understanding sympathetic activity or blood pressure was really done all in white men. And, you know, it's nice to see NIH and our own colleagues and others, you know, just putting a lot more emphasis on trying to expand that out and understand a little bit better our diverse population. Craig, I'd like to ask you if you'd like to discuss any other aspects or mention anything that you think is related that you'd like to highlight for this discussion today.
I have to say, you know, when I read a really nice paper, it breeds a number of questions. I think that's, for me, that's the mark of a good paper. And I had all sorts of questions and you know, Jason, you touched on some of the future work that you're going to be doing here, sex being an important one, habituation versus duration or history of alcohol use. One of the questions I really had, and maybe you can comment on or you know or not, was really the effect of intoxication or inebriation as opposed to the amount of alcohol that you gave, and particularly the next morning. I'm thinking to myself, you know, night of binge drinking, I might be a little bit hungover the next morning. And that form of kind of cognitive, mental, physical stress, I'm just wondering whether or not that morning after, how those individuals were feeling, or whether or not that's an added stress that might be at play here.
Craig, excellent, excellent question. And we were fortunate enough during the NIH review cycle where a reviewer asked that very question and demanded that we account for that. You know, the alcohol literature and the alcohol field is dominated by some of those aspects, morning after impacts. And so we, during the revision process, we were able to partner with a colleague at the University of Chicago. I happened to be doing a sabbatical there at the time, and her name is Dr. Harriet DeWitt, and she's an expert in cognitive aspects related to alcohol. And so we've been doing a number of cognitive tasks associated with this the morning after. We've been measuring things like hangover and degree of hangover. Unfortunately, those require large sample sizes, and she helped us with that. And so we continue to collect that in hopes that that is yet another question we'll be able to answer in the future. So it's valid. It's something that I think is going to take us a little bit more time to have the right amount of data because of the variability that exists in those symptoms, morning after symptoms. But it's certainly something that we are very interested in, and I hope is going to yield some fruit in the near future.
I'd like to thank Jason Carter and Craig Steinbeck for joining us today for this AJP Heart podcast. Kara, back to you.
Thanks for listening. Would you like to hear more? Visit the AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology homepage for our latest episodes.